And good morning. Welcome in at 8:32 to our monthly education roundtable. And boy, it's nice to look into the other room and see three veteran educators with us today. Dr. Gabe Edgar from Marceline, how are you, sir?
Doing well. Thanks for having me, Bob.
You recognize these two sitting across the table from you?
I do, and they're both more veteran than I am.
Mike Reynolds from Glasgow, how are you, sir?
I'm good, Bob. Thanks for having me.
And the guy to your right, we're going to have fun at his expense today, aren't we?
That's right.
Dr. Kelly Shelby from West Rand. How are you, Doctor?
I'm doing great. I think Gabe just said I was old, so we're not off to a very good start.
Well, I've got the receding hairline and the gray hair, so we'll just leave it at that. I think I'm older than all three of you. All right, I got to ask you, Dr. Shelby, you are the one who is retiring here. We're not going to have a whole lot of fun at your expense, but are you looking forward to this?
Actually, I am. Like I said, I've loved my time spent in education, but feel like after 31 years, it's time to look to do something different. And like I said, my oldest daughter has made me a grandfather for the first time, and they're currently living in Pennsylvania, so I want to kind of free up some time to be able to go and see them.
All right, one thing we like to do when we start here, talk about why everyone got involved in education. Mike, how about you? What got you started?
You know, way back into probably junior high and high school, I thought I wanted to be a teacher and a coach. I had two choices. It was either going to be in education or in broadcasting. And you're doing such a good job here, I think I made a right move.
Okay, well, we may have a job for you at some point. You're not going to be retiring anytime soon, are you?
Oh, well, you never know. I don't plan on it. You guys are looking for a part-time position to cover sporting events. Right up my alley. I've been practicing.
Okay. I want to let you pass along a really cool story about the girls went to the Final Four, and you know the girls' basketball coach pretty well, and she's got an important connection to your family, doesn't she?
Yeah, that was really a neat opportunity for us. In 2000, when we won the state title, my best player was Molly Thompson. Fortunately, a few months later, we gave birth to our third daughter. We named her Molly after my coach. A few years down the road, as an administrator, I get an opportunity to hire what was once my best player as my girls' basketball coach. And 18 years later, my daughter Molly gets to play for Coach Molly, and had the thing you wanted to as a student athlete. She played her best basketball down the stretch and scored a career high on her final game, and it matched the same total points that Molly Thompson scored in 2000. So that was pretty neat. We didn't win a state title this time, but a fourth place this year it was a really fun time.
All right. Hey, did you ever beat her one on one in basketball, the coach?
Well, we wouldn't play. Maybe just some horse occasionally, and I don't know what our record is.
That's a no.
Yeah, I kind of thought it was. Dr. Edgar, what got you started in this game of education?
Well, my road, Bob, is a long one, so I'll just kind of give you a brief background. Whenever I actually graduated from high school, I thought I was going to go into the insurance business, and I went to Missouri State University. Now Missouri State University was Southwest Missouri State, and tried a couple of different areas. I was one of those guys that had 154 undergraduate hours, so I had a hard time figuring out what I wanted to do. But whenever I, you know, towards the end, I thought about going down the field of education, and would never look back now, to be honest with you. I taught business education, and so that's kind of the road that I took, and this is where I'm at today.
All right, when did you go to SMS?
I graduated high school in 92, so I was there from 90. Fall of 92 to spring of 97.
So you were there at a really exciting time then.
Yep.
With the Lady Bears having all their success.
Yeah, actually, Lady Bears went to the Final Four. Also, the men's team. Steve Alford was the men's coach at that time, and they went to the Sweet 16.
All right. I did the Lady Bears games in 95. I wonder if I ever saw you at Hammond's.
I'm sure you did.
Or were you the one making all that noise?
I probably was making some noise.
All right, Dr. Shelby, what got you started in education?
Actually, like I said, I was the kid that was going to play in the NBA and all that stuff, and that really didn't work out for me too well. So I actually, probably about my sophomore year, I started looking at maybe ways that I could stay in and around the game of basketball. I knew I wanted to coach, and kind of I went on and got my degree in physical education, K-12, and I was able to start my career at Tyne Avalon and was there 6 years and coached a little bit of everything and then kind of got into administration. So to answer the question, I guess around my sophomore year, I kind of knew I wanted to coach and teach.
All right. Do you miss the coaching days at all?
I miss game day. I don't really miss all the grind of the practices and that, but as far as the competition on game day, I do still kind of miss that.
Mike, you're shaking your head. You understand that?
Well, I do, but I think these guys would agree that the coaching venue is now 12 months. You don't start when the season's first day of practice and end when the season's over. Our coaches are busy planning summer events, and I tell you what, it takes a lot of time to do it and do it right for your kiddos.
All right, Gabe, did you ever get a chance to coach?
I did. I coached my first 6 years, I guess, and was never a head coach outside of golf, but coached a little bit of everything and enjoyed it. But I would echo Mike's sentiments. I would not. I don't know that I'd be very good at it today, just because I don't know that I could commit 12 months to something like that.
All right. How much golf are you going to get in this summer?
Oh, I'll get in a little bit.
All right. Hey, who's the? I got to ask you this question. The first time I asked you this, I didn't realize how seriously you took it. Who's the best golfer in your family?
Well, I am. I still am. He thinks he can beat me every once in a while, and it may be in a couple years.
All right.
He's going to have to do something to prove it to me, for sure.
All right. Hey, let's talk a little funding. We're going to talk technology. We're going to talk virtual schools. And Mike, let's begin with you and talk about funding. How are things at Glasgow at this point?
Well, you know, our funding's good. Our reserves are good. We were fortunate. Our patrons passed a tax rate increase several years ago, so we're optimistic that we'll have a positive balance at the end of this fiscal year, and we're hoping to continue to improve our facilities to enhance our learning for our students in the classroom and make some improvements to our campus in the next couple of years.
I was about to say, how tough is funding to deal with for a superintendent?
Well, yeah, you always have some question marks. You probably have a little sigh of relief when the legislative session's over, but my philosophy is no news is good news when it comes to the legislative end of it, and we never worry that much about the federal aspects and what they are or are not saying, because my two cents is you've got to submit about 10 pieces of paper for every dollar you get on the Fed end, and it doesn't amount to many dollars when the days end.
All right, Dr. Shelby, here's your one difficult question for the day. Can you explain Hold Harmless to us?
Actually, I can, yeah. And like I said, more and more school districts are becoming Hold Harmless, but you're actually held to an amount. I think it's the 2004 amount currently on the current formula. You're not going to get any less money than that per student. And like I said, it's for us, like I said, 85% of our funding comes from local property taxes, so we do not get a lot of state aid at all anyway, but we are held harmless at that 2004 amount.
How did you learn financing? Who's kind of your mentor?
Actually, I was blessed when I was working on my specialist degree to have Chris Straub as my finance teacher. Chris is a long time. He was a superintendent at Hannibal, superintendent at Jefferson City Public Schools, and then he went on and worked for DESE and different things there. And he's, you know, I would consider him a school finance genius, and probably still is. And I'm old enough that, you know, whenever I first started doing budgets, you know, I would do them on a legal pad, and I still kind of do that. You know, with all the new technology now, there's easier ways to do that, but I'm old school enough that I still do it the old-time way.
Dr. Shelby, it's got to be fun for you. How about for you, Dr. Edgar? Do you use the spreadsheets, the legal pads, or is it all on computer?
Well, everything's on computer for me, and I'll kind of go back to where I began as well. Roger Adamson actually works for L.J. Hart & Company, and he was a retired superintendent from the Oak Grove School District, and if it wasn't for Roger, I wouldn't have had an idea of what to do, but we're all pretty blessed to have each other too. You know, we have a pretty good network of superintendents in Northeast Missouri, and if you have a serious question, then you just know these guys are one phone call away.
All right, I know you've got a ballot issue too coming up. What's going on with that one?
Yeah, we actually have a ballot issue. It's a no tax increase ballot issue for Proposition Kids for $2.1 million. It's one of those that's a little bit hard to sell, Bob, to be honest with you. It's not fancy. You know, concrete's not fancy. Roofs aren't fancy. But, I would just encourage those people that have those questions, to give me a call so I can kind of explain the purpose of running no tax increase bond issues, so you don't have to take away from the teachers and the students later on down the road. You want to take care of that preventative maintenance type stuff through bond issues, so you can pay your teachers a little bit more, so you can offer better programs and those types of things. And I don't think people understand it. public education funding is very confusing, but you know, if you just give me 5 or 10 minutes, I can lead you in the right direction.
I know the question you told me you get asked an awful lot. How can you get $2.1 million without raising taxes?
Right, and you know, and that's the way I start. We actually completed 23 presentations in the community over the last month and a half, and that's kind of the way I started the presentation was, how do you do that? You know, you just try to explain that to them, that it is an extension of the debt. You explain to them how long that extension of the debt is going to be, and then also, you know, talk to them about making prepayments and those types of things, and how you can, you know, if that debt is extended to 2039, what can I do as a superintendent, or what can the Board of Education do to bring that back to 2036, for instance?
All right. No matter what happens, you still got to have a new roof, don't you?
That's right. And you do have to have the new roof. And so if you don't pass the bond issue, and the roof has to come from somewhere, and unfortunately it's going to have to come from Fund 1. And you know, Mike had alluded to balances earlier, and I know their balances, at Mike and Kelly's both, are both a lot bigger than mine. We try to keep ours about 20 to 25%. And so if you cut into that, and that roof still costs $650,000, and for instance, if I have $1.5 million in reserves and I take $650,000 out of that, I'm down to $800,000. You do that twice and you're broke. So. And those are the things I just want the people to understand. I appreciate everybody's opinion, but I just want people to understand the facts.
Mike, have you guys run a bond issue in the last handful of years?
Bob, we haven't. We actually attempted to run one in 2000, and it failed. A tax rate at the same time passed. We ran a tax rate increase a few years ago, and we're very fortunate that it passed. But we went a route of lease purchase. We've loaned the money ourselves as a school district, as opposed to running bond issues, and have been successful in being able to do that without hurting our reserves along the way.
So you guys ran a tax increase issue that did go through. What's it like for a superintendent that night when you're wondering what's going on?
Well, just like lots of folks are next week, you're nervous, you're anxious, you're waiting for your county clerks to get a hold of you. You hope you've reached out to all of your patrons, explained why you're doing what you're doing, and how that will impact your, not only your school, but your community in future years. And we were very fortunate and very thankful for the support we received from our community.
So, Gabe, how about you? What are you going to be doing election night?
Well, I'll just be waiting, you know, just waiting anxiously. Like I said, this is my fourth one as superintendent, and the last three were a little easier just because they were a better sell. I still have hope, and I still have, you know, faith that the community will come through. But I'll be anxious to see what happens.
How about you, Dr. Shelby? Have you run any issues since you've been superintendent?
Actually, like I said, I've spent 17 years at Westrand, and over those 17 years, we have not had a need to run either a levy increase or a bond issue. So I feel very blessed in being able to say that.
All right. Let's turn the table and talk a little technology, and let's start at Westrand. Where are you guys now? Where are you headed?
Okay, actually, technology-wise, we have spent several dollars over the last 5 years, I would say. We are if we're not one-to-one, we are very close to being one-to-one as far as having a device for every student we have enrolled at Westrand. What's made that a little bit easier, about 3 years ago, we've committed to Chromebooks, which cost-wise is a lot more feasible as far as being able to afford those. And technology-wise, we have teachers that have bought in to being able to use the technology. The kids, that's how kids want to learn now. So, you know, we have not pulled the trigger and allow kids to bring their own devices. So as a school district, we have made the commitment that we are going to make sure we have enough devices on hand for every child.
Mike, technology is challenging, isn't it?
Well, it is, and we're not a one-to-one initiative yet in terms of resources to our students. Some of the things that we've done that everybody else has to deal with aren't maybe as glamorous. Infrastructure, more servers, bigger servers, just recently doubling our bandwidth yet again because of all the online state assessments. We did pick up a virtual classroom that it's on a mobile unit, and we can take it around so our kids, actually grades K through 12, have been able to go to the Great Wall in China. They've been underseas. They put the goggles on, and our students really enjoy it, and our teachers just love it.
So where are you headed then? Where do you think you're going with technology?
Well, you know, it's that's a good question, Bob, and I don't really have an answer for you. you know, if there's new initiatives out there that can help my teachers and can help my students, and obviously we're going to try to do the best we can to get those resources into them.
All right. How about a Marceline, Dr. Edgar?
Well, we're kind of in the same boat. We actually have been one-to-one for this is our fourth year now. And to be honest, with you, in the beginning, we were a little bit hesitant of, you know, jumping off the cliff, so to speak. And but I think we're getting more and more comfortable. I think one of the challenges that we faced, Bob, was our kids were a lot more advanced than the teachers in the area of technology. And so it was tough in some areas to try to convince those teachers that this is what was best for kids at that time. But I think we have proceeded, and, you know, we're beyond that now. And, you know, just as Mike said, all we're going to do is try to take a proactive approach to stay ahead of the game. And if it's good for kids, then we'll put it in their hands.
So how tough is it to keep up to date with technology? Because as soon as you get something for them, it's outdated, isn't it?
Yeah, you're right. And I don't know that you can. You just allot a certain amount of money each year towards technology, and you have no idea what that money is allotted to. It's just technology in general, and then whatever pops up, that's what you spend it on.
Okay, I got to ask you, Dr. Shelby, what's the first computer you used?
Oh, my. I can still remember having the old hole punch cards and stuff back whenever I was at Mobley Junior College. Had a microcomputer class with Don Brown was the instructor. And I remember walking in there, and I was very, very confused right from the get-go. But and you know, I remember back when computers used to take up half a classroom. I mean, just huge. It's unbelievable, and it is going to be interesting to see as we move into the future what devices are going to look like and be able to do.
Mike, your first computer, was that a Tandy? That's the first one I ever got to work with.
You know, I can't remember the first computer, Bob. I do remember in high school my business class is switching over to electric typewriters, and I thought that was the thing. And now I've got to search high and long to find an electric typewriter at school. But we keep a couple around, and I actually kind of enjoy getting on it every once in a while.
So if someone was to tell, say, a 7th or 8th grader now to use some whiteout on a piece of paper, would they have any clue what they were doing?
Not very many of them, only when it comes to filling out scholarship applications.
All right, virtual education. Let's toss this on. Dr. Edgar, is this going to be more and more important for rural schools as we go forward?
I think so. We're actually kind of at a standstill with it right now, Bob. I'm kind of intrigued to hear a little bit more about what Mike has to talk about with his class. But we actually formed a consortium about 7 or 8 years ago. And it was a consortium of small schools in the area to try to offer upper-level math and Spanish and those types of things through virtual education and through those types of opportunities. But it kind of went by the wayside. It ran out of gas a little bit. So we're kind of at a standstill with the whole virtual education thing.
How about at Westrand?
We currently are not using a virtual. We've been blessed to be able to employ, you know, certified teachers with the master's degrees to be able to do our dual credit and those type of things. And I think that's what's going to lead school districts into looking into the virtual education stuff is having that ability to be able to offer those dual credit college level classes that they may not be able to do at the local level. But we've been blessed to be able to offer several hours of dual credit with just our regular classroom teachers.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see how it works with Madison, as they're partnering with that group out of Springfield to do some of their classes as well. How about Glasgow? How is that virtual education working? I know it's not a whole class, is it?
Well, see, we've been a part of actually an interactive television consortium way back into, I think, 1991, 92. One of our math and physics teachers was on a nationwide commercial for, at that time, Southwestern Bell. And our consortium's grown. We actually have a large group of high schools in Central Missouri, as well as a couple of colleges. So what we've done with ours is we've made up for the inability to fund and hire foreign language instructors simply because it's not feasible, and allow our kiddos to take college classes to the point to where many of them will go into their freshman year more or less in a sophomore status. It's very affordable to take the dual credit offerings that we offer. And by and large, every senior class has numerous students that have over 20 hours of college credit before they ever step onto an actual campus. So getting rid of the foreign languages in terms of hiring somebody and being able to pick that up somewhere else, that's been very advantageous, and we now have two classrooms that go on a daily basis, and we send a few classes out, but by and large, we pick up a lot of classes from other sites.
And really, to do that, you need to have the technology in place, don't you?
You do, and in that case, it's the infrastructure. It's having things that, that may not be glamorous that you see. And of course, with us, we had to be creative and find another small classroom that was vacant and kind of set it up to where we could go ahead and send classes out and, in particular, receive classes.
All right, Dr. Edgar, where are we headed with education next 5, 10 years? Where do you see it going?
If you'd asked me that question 5 or 10 years ago, I would have got it totally wrong, so I'm sure that I'm probably going to get this answer totally wrong. I think, Bob, most important, we've kind of talked about one of the areas. I think it's very imperative that school districts keep up on technology. Whether you like it or not, that is the future. And so I think that's one thing that you have to do. And I would like to think that, school funding is probably going to hopefully become a little bit more stable. In my 11 years as superintendent, the word stable has not come into any kind of question as far as school funding is concerned. But, over the last 12 months, we've heard some things regarding possible fully funding the formula, and the formula will probably change over the next 5 to 10 years as you ask that question. But I think we're in a pretty good place right now. And I think if the legislators take a hard look around us, and I'm talking about states that are next to us, there's some that are really struggling with education right now. And I think if they just take a look at that and understand that really we are going in the right direction in the state of Missouri.
Well, the new Franklin superintendent said one of the reasons he came to Missouri is because of the way things are with education in Kansas right now. So, yeah, I understand what you're saying.
And I wasn't going to mention Kansas.
Well, let's just hope they lose over the weekend, but that's another story. How about recruiting teachers, Dr. Shelby? How important is that going to be in the next 5, 10 years?
Actually, it's always important. I said that those teachers that work with those students in those classrooms on a daily basis, that is how you meet your accountability measures. It's not so much what happens in the superintendent's office or the other school administrators' offices. It's, what's happened on a daily basis in those classrooms drives what goes on in your school district. And when it comes time to take those tests at the end of the year, like I said, it doesn't matter a whole lot what Dr. Shelby's done all year. It's what those individual teachers have done with those kids in those classrooms.
So, Mike, how do we keep schools competitive and get the teachers we need?
Well, you have to start with, in terms of your school climate, what you can offer resources-wise, and then also be competitive with your salary schedules. Take a look at the area schools. The last thing you want to have is to have a good young teacher come up and say, I'm sorry, I'm going to go down the road because I have an opportunity to provide more for my family. So I think all of us are always trying to do everything we can in terms of benefits that we offer for our certified and non-certified folks so that we keep them around.
All right. And Dr. Shelby, as we get ready to wrap up, what are you going to miss most about education?
Actually, I think first and foremost is going to be the students. I think that's one reason why we all get into this business, the love for kids. I've also made a tremendous amount of friends over the 31 years, so I'm going to miss that. But like I said, I'm still going to be around. I'm not going to disappear, so I'm still going to be able to do some things, and I'm looking forward to that.
All right. Dr. Edgar, we've got about a minute left in the program. If you were going to give his successor, Mike Nagel, some advice, what would you tell him?
It's going to be easy to follow him.
What's it like, though, as a first-year superintendent?
There's a lot of challenges, and Mike will do a good job. They picked the right guy over there at Westrand. And like I had mentioned earlier regarding the resources that surround us, there's a lot of good people in Northeast Missouri. So Mike just has to know that he can reach out to us and ask us any questions, hard questions, easy questions, whatever he wants.
Mike, how about from your standpoint, what would you tell him?
I'd tell him that for several years he'll be able to, if things don't go right, he'll be able to blame his predecessor. Well, that was Dr. Shelby's fault. I did it for about 8 years.
All right. Hey, gentlemen, thanks so much for being with us today. Have a great day.
All right. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you.
All right, Dr. Kelly Shelby from Westrand, Mike Reynolds from Glasgow, and our good friend Dr. Gabe Edgar from Marceline. They've joined us today on the Education Roundtable.